iTech Gear Weekly, episode number 17. An unreleased device walks into a bar. As I said, I am Christopher Spera and the editor-in-chief of iTechGear.org. With me today is former contributing writer from Gear Diary and currently the host of the Linux Link Tech Show and living in the shade of the 80s arcade podcast. Mr. Joel McLaughlin, how you doing there, brother Joel?
Good evening. I'm doing well, and of course, I got my retro computer sitting next to me, so I'm loving life right now.
Awesome. That chuckle of sorts, of course, is Mr. Chris Cavula, former contributing editor over at Gear Diary and Pocket Now. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing good. Did somebody hand you like a monster to drink or something?
No.
You're all ramped up.
It's all ramped up and nowhere to go.
So, coffee.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. Coffee. Yes. Anyway, there's a couple of interesting things that I wanted to talk about this time around. There's been a lot of talk, not only between us, during off show weeks and during the regular week, but some press out there about smartwatches. We saw the ungodly ugly render, or at least assumed render, of what the Google Watch might be. And then somebody, where did you say, Joel, was in Oregon?
And why? I think so.
Yeah, in Oregon, you know, walked this device into a bar and kind of left it there. All right. A la who, which, what was it, Engadget that this happened to back with the iPhone 4? A long time ago in the dark time before the Empire, right?
Yeah.
All right. A la Engadget kind of left the watch there for obviously somebody to find. It worked for a little while until it ran out of power. It doesn't use standard Qi charging, so they couldn't reboot this thing, but or get it to come back on because they don't have the proprietary charger. But obviously they were able to play with it a little bit. All right.
Mm-hmm. They were able to boot it and it showed Google's G logo. That's why it's being assumed that this is the Pixel Watch.
Yeah.
Even though it was found in, of all places, Oregon, one would think it might be in San Francisco, but
why in Oregon? That doesn't make any sense.
There. Yeah. No. It, yeah. So it's, it, yeah, it, it's, yeah. And yeah, it was the iPhone 4 in a bar in 2010.
Yeah.
So
that was a great story at the time, I remember.
Oh yeah.
I know.
Oh no, I'm not going to jail. What? I'm going to jail?
Yeah.
What do you mean you're suing
me? Now, I mean, I will say it could potentially be that, but then it also could be somebody's just project to try and put, I don't know, to put Wear OS on it, you know. Yeah. You know, so I think it's suspect. I do think that they are working on the Pixel Watch because I'm going to be brutally honest here. Wear OS needs help.
Wear OS does need help. And this is one of the reasons why I did want to go ahead and talk about this a little bit this week. Because, you know, you've got the Google Pixel Watch. All right. And then you've got pick a Wear OS watch because there are a gob ton of them out there. All right. With varying front ends on them, whether it is the Galaxy Watch 4. Or for classic, whether it is
or any of the fossil watches.
Some of what I like to call the rebrands. Companies probably wouldn't have done it by themselves, kind of thing.
Right. The Fossil Gen 6, the Moboy's Tick Watch Pro 3 Ultra, the Moto 360, and there are even some luxury watches out there that are running Wear OS. The one
Michael
from Tag
Kors.
You know, the one from Tag comes to mind.
Sure.
You know, and then, you know, but why, what I really wanted to get down is why do we wear a smart, why does anybody wear a smartwatch? What do we really want out of these things? All right.
Right.
Because Google's coming up with one. Apple's fixing to come out with, you know, the Apple Watch 8. All right. And from what I understand, Apple is very evolutionary with their watch. I mean, there's going to be the same size screen from what I saw and from what I heard.
It'll be the same shape too.
Same shape, same size screen. It'll have a new processor. It might have a new
additional sensors
sensor, and all that's going to do is potentially monitor body temperature, and that's really more for female related health as opposed to anybody's you know, watching, hey, do I have the flu or COVID or something else, right? It's really meant for female health. But you know, what do we really want? I mean, there are those health sensor things that are out there right now. I mean, on most Wear OS watches, and on for some for the Apple Watch, you've got cardio or heart rate, EKG, arrhythmia watching, et cetera. You've got pulse ox, which is blood oxygen saturation. You've got sleeper readiness watching, which is the last feature that is, I think, is going to be updated in the new Apple Watch that's coming out, and will likely be announced or at least referred to at WWDC in June.
Right.
They've got updated sleep readiness, sleep quality, or some level of readiness, which is basically, you know, your ability to start the day and be energized. Some level of exercise or activity monitoring, workouts, walking, some level of movement monitoring, just to make certain that your butt doesn't get too big and you don't get a blood clot that, you know, throws that you throw into your lungs, right? And some level of notifications. You've got stuff for productivity, which is calendar and email. You've got reminders and timers, and then you've got like some system events and notifications for app and OS updates, device location, etc. I would really like to see a little bit more, wouldn't you?
Well, you know, the number one thing I want to see isn't a new feature. It's better battery life. And I'm not talking about, you know, I understand that some of these watches, they get 2 or 3 days or whatever, but they compromise a lot of stuff to get there.
They do.
And I want to see the functionality level that you get out of an Apple Watch or out of some of these better Wear OS watches.
Mm-hmm.
But I want the battery. I would even put up with a slightly, not dramatically, but slightly thicker device.
I was going to say, without it being three feet thick, I would, I agree.
Because to me, the fact is, I mean, if you're not wanting to use it for daytime activity like exercising and monitoring your day, and you wanted to use for your sleep, when are you supposed to charge this thing?
Right.
That's right. Right. Yeah. I mean, and that goes towards where one of the things that I think Apple started doing and several others have started doing is putting a 4G connection in. It's like, I kind of don't want that on my phone, watch.
You know, well, the idea there, of course, with cellular connectivity is, you know, you don't have to take your phone out with you to constantly have a connection.
And you can take the call. You can take the call on the phone.
Well, it's not just the call. You're out jogging. You've got your streaming music. You're streaming your whatever it is that you're listening to, podcasts, music, whatever, some kind of audio. And you've got the ability to take calls. You've got the ability to track GPS and have it transmit back to whatever application you're using to track all that stuff.
I already carry a phone with me all the time. You know, I don't run myself. So like I went on a hike today and I was listening to a podcast while I was on my hike and I had my phone was jammed in my camera bag. So it wouldn't fall out of my shorts, you know? So it's like, that's one case where I would have loved to be able to just control the podcast from my watch or something, which most smartwatches do. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, when you talk about the battery life, you're going to have to compromise some of these things. So, well, if there's a sensor that I would love to have on the watch that nobody has yet, it would be
blood sugar. Yeah.
I would say glucose monitor. Yep.
Yeah.
Give me the G word. That's
the only one.
The Nirvana. That one is the holy grail of health related sensors.
Right? I think so.
I can guarantee you that the first company to come out with one that will work and work well,
they're going to sell gangbusters.
It's going to make a butt ton of money.
Yeah. Yep. I'm wondering, you know, there's a lot of people working right now on true wireless charging. You don't have to set it on a pad.
Right.
And that may be the answer for some of these watches and these wearables.
Yep.
But But right now, yeah, to me, that's bigger than any sensor. But if I had to pick a sensor, I would want to add it. I agree with what Joel said. I'd like to see that that blood sugar monitoring coming
glucose,
in there.
It's important. There are you know, a number of folks around the world, not just us, you know, lazy fat Americans, but
that's right.
Out there that, if, you know, for whatever reason, whether it's type 1 or type 2 diabetes, you know, has some level of glucose monitoring issues. And I would love to be able to see that. Right now, it's
possible exist. Too, because you can buy a device called the Dexcom that sticks, you usually stick it somewhere on your body, and it can monitor that. I don't know if it's Bluetooth or not.
Yes, it is, but, because you kind of stick your phone over the top of it, or it may be NFC related. You stick your phone over it and it just pops it in. The thing though, I don't know if that actually does it nick your skin? Does it scratch your skin?
That's a good question. Yeah.
You know, does it actually have a needle that goes in? I mean, they're good for about 2 weeks at a pop. All right. And then they've got to be changed out. I looked into them for my wife and I, but the problem is they're like $700-$800.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
You know, to go ahead and do, which is why you don't see them out and about unless you really have an issue. You know, and most insurance companies right now will not cover them. And that's why they're so expensive.
I think they won't cover them unless you're like a type one, because the type one, you know, there's literally nothing you can do to fix it.
Right. Right.
So, but
for type twos, they're just not doing it. But that's another reason why I want the sensor on the watch, because I wear a watch every day. You know, and I would like to be able to go ahead and have that, but you know,
even if I have to hit a stupid button on the watch or something, to pick it up,
and that
doesn't have to monitor it all the time, but you know, I finished dinner or something, press a button on the watch, there it's done.
Or better yet, you know, Kate, that you're about to eat, and then it goes ahead and waits 2 hours after you eat, and then provides you with a notification as well as that says, you know, it's been post 2 hours after your last meal. Here's your current blood sugar reading, you know.
And yes, you shouldn't have ate that whole pizza
or that whole Boston cream pie. Yes,
that's right.
but it notifies you. It shows you the reading, and then it shoots it right over to whatever health monitoring or health data collecting app you're using, whether it is Apple Health or whether it is Google Fit or pick another branded Mobi Health or whatever other,
or even
for Galaxy watches or whatever. The point is it does that automatically. When that happens, whoever gets there first with a level of accuracy, they're going to make a butt ton of money. Now, Apple will eventually get there, and they will say that, hey, you know, we've watched all of this. We've, you know, done our own research into how those things work, the way they work, and we've perfected it. Ta-da, here you go. You know, and that's the way they'll come. But I can guarantee you, you know, the blood, they, I don't think, does Apple Watch do pulse ox yet?
I thought it could, but I'm not 100% sure. I know my cheap Wise watch does it, but
and so does every other Tizen and Wear OS watch that I have does it as well. I mean, and it's fabulous. Love it. All right. Love it. It's a huge help with me. I'm a huge asthmatic, and it's a big problem for me. So I like knowing where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Same thing, you know, when my granddaughter's around, she's, you know, a huge asthmatic. I like, you know, being able to slap it on her if she's got problems.
It does do blood ox. So.
Okay. Yep. On series 6 and series 7 and pulse oximeter. Yep.
Good.
And a pulse oximeter on, for, folks like me who, well, I think you're on it too, CPAP machines.
I was just going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big deal to know in the morning what your O2 is.
Yep.
And have it
tracked throughout the night. Absolutely. Yep. It's an awesome thing. All right.
Yep.
So we'll see what happens, but the time has come. For anybody who may be listening, the time has come. We need a wearable wearable revolution, if you will. All right, we need to figure out exactly whatever the hell it is we're going to do with these things and then do it. All right. Yep. because at this point there is definitely a need, and I'm getting tired of waiting. I mean, there was talk of a glucose monitor, geez, back in 2018. All right.
Yep.
They were having Apple was having trouble figuring out that tech. They bought a company or two that had some of that stuff, and they were going to build it in with the distinct purpose of building it into Apple Watch, and we haven't seen it yet.
Remember, though, there's two sides to the problem. One is to get the mechanics of the tech to work.
Yeah, there's obviously regulatory.
There's regulatory.
I get it.
Getting approvals. It takes years sometimes to get them to allow you to.
I understand that, but I would like to know a little bit more about.
I think so.
Are we? You know, how close are we? What are we doing with it? Because to be very, very honest, there's no reason why at this point in time that we shouldn't be able to do something like this. All right.
Yep.
It's just whether, and it's not so much whether there's going to be problems with the technology. It's whether or not it is reliable enough, especially for type ones, to be able to go ahead and post those notifications and alerts when blood sugars drop too low and or too high, and you've got to take some level of intervention, interventory, is that even a word, in this context, some level of intervention, right? Some kind of interventive action, right? In order to be able to go ahead and resolve either the low sugar or the high sugar issue. But I would think that at this point, we've got to be close, kids. Can we please, you know, get to it? Honestly.
Well, considering I just went to Alibaba and I don't know. That could be sketchy, but. And it says 2022 new product luxury V3E iOS Android waterproof ECG blood oxygen blood glucose watch. All right. It says $390 for 0 to 10 pieces. The shipping's $42. Longbow from China, semi sketchy, but
yeah, but you know how many times on Amazon I see a 2 gig SD card advertised for $5. You know, really, there's nothing.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so you don't know. Wait, right?
Don't worry, it'll fail soon. You'll get it. Yeah. It'll work, and then in about 2 months it'll be gone.
Exactly.
It's gonna come. I mean, there are others that I know agree. They're all working on it. I mean, it's like
it's been 5 years.
But if the technology was impossible, excuse me, while I stamp
my impatient little foot, you know,
right?
But if the technology was impossible, somebody would have backed away from this and said, "This just can't be done." I think it can't. I think they're all very, very close to getting it. I don't think it's that it doesn't work. I think it's a matter of okay, now how do you get it into this package? How do you deal with the compromises? All that kind of stuff.
So, for example, like my company uses Livongo, which does both. It's they do blood sugar monitors as well as blood pressure and a scale, which I actually just got the scale not too long ago. And they all have a 4G connection into it that you don't pay for. Just how the Kindles worked.
Yeah.
And it just automatically uploads it to that app. And the nice thing with Livongo is the supplies for it are free. I don't have to pay for them as long as I'm working for my current company. So when I get low, I just press a button on the meter itself and watches it. But I still have to prick my finger every morning.
I get
which, you. Which, you know, and I'm used to it. But if somebody, you know, somebody actually would fix that so I don't have to do that, awesome. But like I remember when I was still in my Gear Diary days that I actually wrote a review on the Dario blood glucose monitor kit. That was a little dongle that you plugged into the bottom of your iPhone back when iPhones actually had headphone jacks. But you know, and I thought that was cool, but now I don't even care about that because all the like my wife's I think she's got a Bear one that uses Bluetooth to transfer it to, because it's nice that when you walk into your doctor's office, pull that phone out and show them, yeah, here, I've not been doing a good job. Yeah, I know.
And I do that today with my blood pressure through there your health monitoring apps, you know?
Yep. So it's like, yeah, I'm like, you, the doctor doesn't really need to shame you. You're already shamed when you walk in the office. So
so now we can thank our devices for yet one more skill set, shaming us.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah. So speaking of shaming, it was a really crummy segue.
What the heck was that?
Chris, you happened to go ahead and bring up some interesting developments on the MS Duo 2 side of the world.
Sure. So, you know, there's an interesting world right now where we're in the foldables and, in Microsoft's case, dual screen devices and a few others. But and when the Duo products first came out a couple years ago now, as a dual screen device, they're interesting. Everybody said, well, this is interesting, but the implementation stinks. I mean, that was the bottom line. And it was overpriced. Then last year, they came out with the Duo 2 late last year and improved some things from a hardware perspective, unimproved some things as we've talked, camera, or bump, I should say.
Yeah.
But the point is, again, the price was still too high, but the device overall was better. Mm-hmm. What happened early this year in the January, February timeframe is Microsoft released a whole bunch of patches and updates and improvements for both the Duo, the original Duo and the Duo 2. They got a lot better. They got a lot more stable. The software became much more capable than it had been in terms of handling the dual screen device. And they put it on a track that specifically said that, yeah, we're planning on bringing Android 12L to it. Yeah, we're planning on going for a while yet. They gave a few years of support. You know, they, I think they have, what, 3 years support each, absolutely minimum, or something like that.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, what we started to see in the last month or so here is two things happened. One is reviewers started to say, gee, we're looking at this device again, and it ain't so bad. It's actually pretty good if you have the use case for it. Sure. It's really much better than it had been, and you really ought to take a second look at it. But the more important thing is almost everybody has kind of said the same kind of thing, that the price point was still too high. Now, to be fair, it's a dual screen device with, you know, it is probably a relatively expensive to manufacture. So on one hand, I get it, but yeah, it's hard to sell it when it's up there and people aren't quite getting the use case. So all of a sudden, Microsoft in the last few weeks has reduced the entry level price point to $999 US dollars. That's what some people have said is the sweet spot for them to take a very serious look at this device. And the sales, you know, they don't report the sales exactly, but it seems like everybody is a lot happier with how it's selling. If you try to look at it and order it from the Microsoft website, certain models are often out of stock. So when we looked at the Duo 1 at that same point in its existence, you know, 6 or 8 months out, prices were plummeting and they couldn't give them away.
Sure.
So that's a slightly different behavior model we're seeing for it. My understanding is there will be a Duo 3 probably sometime next year. It won't be this year. But it leaves you to wonder. I mean, you know, so does this thing actually have a future? Does this format have a future? It seems to be picking up some steam that it didn't have before and some energy that it didn't have before. So
sure.
I find that kind of interesting to see, because these are all these sort of independent kind of things all starting to sort of come together for this poor little underdog. I want this little underdog to win somehow, you know. It's a clever notion. It's a unique notion in some ways. The way it works is kind of interesting. And I'd like to see it find its place, whatever that place might be. You know, it's certainly not going to replace the iPhone or the Samsung Galaxy or the Google Pixel in our daily use for most people. But I think there's a fair number of people that have a use for this thing that weren't really giving it a look at. Maybe they're going to give it a look now. You got to wonder.
Yeah. You know, interestingly enough, Microsoft had all of the Obsidian color or the black color devices are currently sold out in every configuration that they make them in over at store.microsoft.com. All right. If you look over at Best Buy,
I was just going to say you can find them at Best Buy.
You can find them at Best Buy, but every store that I've seen for the default configuration, which is 8 gigabytes of RAM and 128 gigabytes of storage, they are also sold out.
All right.
They're not available until Friday, May 6th at the earliest. Amazon is completely sold out.
And this has snuck up on us quietly, and I wasn't expecting it. Now, granted, I would argue that Microsoft probably didn't make huge volumes of them because the Duo ones had such issues getting stuck, and there's this chip shortage, and there's all these other things going on. But even having said that, to see this kind of going out, I mean, somebody's interested, you know, even if it's in smaller volumes, it's bigger volumes than it was before.
Agreed.
And so I find that interesting to see that this thing is quietly sort of
disappearing.
It seems to be gaining some momentum, and it's interesting, but it's been very quiet about it.
You know, like I said, we talked about the Duo One at about this time last year.
Yeah, we did.
The price drop for it occurred at about the same time. Both of us went, you know, it'll be, I think it started off at about $500 off, and then it crept a little bit lower and then a little bit lower. And then what, maybe a few months after that, say 3 or so months after that, they announced the Duo 2 and then released it near the end of the year. Wasn't it near the end of the year?
It was. It was. October, November-ish timeframe.
So it'll be interesting to see how they work the Duo 3, if there is a Duo 3. But this is following the same sort of path. I wouldn't be surprised if by, say, this time next month, or by this time 2 months from now, say in July, we don't see them at about between $750 and $699. You know,
I'm not sure if they're going to do that if they're picking up momentum this quickly. I don't know if they will.
It's about the same timing as the Duo Ones,
but the Duo Ones didn't pick up speed in terms of the disappearing from the market. You know, they didn't do that.
They weren't incredibly easy to get, but they were still available.
So I'm wondering. So I'm not sure if the pattern. I mean, it seems to be a more positive pattern this time around, especially in conjunction with positive reviews. The Duo One still had bad reviews when its prices were falling. It had horrible reviews at that point. And so, they jumped to fire sale pricing pretty quickly on the Duo One.
They did.
But the Duo Two, I don't think it's dropping at quite the same rate in terms of that. And I'm not sure it will, especially if the Duo 3 is not imminent. It may just stay here. This may just be its pricing for a while. I don't know. Sure. We'll have to see. But I think it's interesting to see that, again, that there's this sort of reverse wave on this thing going on that I wasn't really expecting to see.
Well, I think it's interesting that they went ahead and priced it originally at $1,499 or $1,500. They've dropped the price by $500 by a third. All right. Yep. And it seems to be flying off the shelves, or at least seems to be
at least what they had is. Yeah.
So it will be interesting. It will also be interesting to see how Android 12L will work on this particular device. And I believe that they were also promising it for the Duo One. So
yes, they are. Yes, they are. And you and I both like the Duo devices. I like the form factor. I mean,
I do.
There's some, I mean, it's not perfect for everybody. It's not perfect for every situation. That's absolutely true.
Correct.
But for a productivity type device where phone calling isn't necessarily your primary, but it might be your secondary thing.
True.
This has actually got a lot going for it.
True. From a note-taking perspective.
It's a really nice device for note-taking. From a data
perspective.
Yep.
From a even from a I'm in a jam and need a quick productivity machine while I'm out to dinner. Mm-hmm. Or
and let's keep in mind, Google and Microsoft worked very closely on Android 12L, and Google got a lot of information from Microsoft about what is needed in these dual screen and these folding screen devices by watching the way you know Microsoft users were using it, and by watching what Microsoft has gone through and trying to develop.
Agree.
The Duo. So the point is, Microsoft has a habit of creating products that aren't necessarily going to be hugely successful, at least not the first shot or two out.
Right.
But they're kind of leading people down a path. Look at the original Surface Pros, the one and the two.
Didn't really take off till the three hit.
Correct. Yep. But Microsoft learned, and each one was slightly different. The three was pretty different, dramatically different than the two.
Yep.
And I think they learned what worked and what didn't work, and they kind of kept what did and got rid of what didn't, and away they went. And the rest for that, again, Surface is not the number one selling PC out there or convertible out there, but it has a name. I mean, it has presence and it has a name. And I think
people know what they are.
And I think that's kind of what Microsoft is shooting for with the Duo as well. Even if you don't, need one or want one, you sure as heck are going to know its name. And that's kind of where they're, I think, what they're trying to shoot for. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of an interesting trend.
I think their next step is right now, they don't seem to be focusing on having carriers carry them. I mean, I know there's one or two, you can probably go to it and get one, but mostly you can go and buy them. I think if they got Verizon to bite on the next Surface Duo, it could really sell. I think.
I agree.
Because Verizon's a huge carrier. In fact, I may end up calling them back and see if they can cut me some slack on the payments, because I just went on their webpage today and the Pixel 6 Pros are down to $7.77 a month.
Well, the carriers,
and it's a three-year term.
The carriers have been saying that the Pixel 6 Pro and the Pixel 6 hasn't sold well for them at the carrier level. And yet Google was always running out of them. So I think it's interesting. That might just be a change in the way people are buying these things. And maybe that's going to be the way that the carrier just isn't where we go for it. I mean, quite frankly, I hate going to the carrier stores. I find them annoying places with people that don't seem to know what I want them to know. And
it's not only that,
or anything.
That these things are locked to that carrier.
Right. So
I can bring my device to the carrier, and if it works out, then great. If I don't like it, then I will make certain that I can go somewhere else and not have to buy a new device.
I use my carrier, but I haven't gone to the carrier store to buy my device in many, many years now.
Right.
And I think that is a trend that other people are starting to follow. It's easier to buy your device on the internet now.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, we'll see what happens to it.
So it's just an interesting trend that
we're going to watch. We're going to watch this one, I know for sure. So we'll see what happens. Speaking of watching things, I know that a lot of folks have been really looking hard at some way of being able to go ahead and not only own the device that they're using because they've paid for it, but being able to repair that device because they don't want to have to go either to the carrier for their for repairs, especially if they're pricey, or walk away with what is effectively a refurbished device, all right, as opposed to my device repaired, right? Interestingly, Apple's released a self-repair kit. That's huge in terms of right to repair, but there's some subtle differences there. There's some subtle things there, aren't there?
Yep. Like, for example, you have to put in your IMEI, or I think it's the IMEI or the serial number.
I thought it was the IMEI, but yeah, you're right.
End of their website, because basically a lot of the components of the iPhones have the serial code bonded into them. Mm-hmm. So they have to make sure that the parts they send you will work. The other thing, too, is, well, this is kind of an interesting take, because you can either rent or buy outright the repair tools, the same tools they use in the Genius Bar.
Sure.
So, and I'm sure that if you buy them, they're not cheap.
You know what strikes me as interesting on the same note is that this same, you know, roughly week or so that the Apple puts this thing out, Microsoft releases a report about how it's more environmentally friendly to repair your own device. All in the same week. Yeah. Now, does that not smell like political theater to you? But you know,
oh my goodness, that's a direct jab at Apple, who's going to,
you know, I apologize. So I want to make it clear: Microsoft didn't make the report; they paid for the study,
right?
Sure.
Which I'm gonna be brutally honest. They really have no room to talk, because it's not like you can easily open up your Surface Pro and repair it. I was gonna say, anybody
try to fix the Surface recently? Yeah.
You know, some of those devices. In fact, even some of the laptops that are out there.
Yes.
On the Windows side. I mean, forget Apple. Yep. And
I remember there was a time.
Oh my goodness!
Where Windows laptops, you'd buy them, and there'd be a little panel right over where the memory module goes in.
Yep.
You can open that little panel up and put a new card in there. Yeah, I think most of them even also had a way you could do the same thing with a hard drive.
Yep.
For this current laptop I'm using tonight, my Asus Republica Gamers laptop.
Yep.
I had to take the whole bottom off to do either of those.
Yep.
And I'm like, why?
Yep. And when they move to SSDs, as opposed to spinning hard drives, you had to go ahead and expose a certain portion of the motherboard in order to be able to swap out that SSD if it was even end user
replacement. I was gonna say, so even Microsoft, with originally you couldn't swap out the SSDs and Surfaces,
right?
In the Surface Pro X you can, however it's kind of a specialized SSD, so it isn't just a pop it out, put it in kind of
just process. Like the Mac Studios.
Yes. Yes. Yes, that's exactly right. You can do it, but
but the specialized drive is going to cost you an arm and a leg.
If you can get it at all. And so it's interesting that that's the approach that we're seeing to be taking now. And I get the devices want to be thinner, and I guess I get that it makes it harder because you got to glue crap and get rid of screws and get rid of connectors. And I understand all of that, and you get performance by not having all that. I get all that.
Yeah.
But there are days, you know, and to be fair, historically, we never historically viewed laptops as repairable. It was or changeable or upgradable. It was always our desktops that we did in the late 90s, early 2000s, but I know what you're saying, certainly more so than today.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But the larger trend was, you know, a laptop you generally left alone, and a desktop was generally the device you shoved cards in and pulled, you know, swap drives out on. And that was the
stuff sort in of thought. I get that. But when you
did it back then with laptops, you ran into compatibility problems and power draw problems and all kinds of things that you couldn't do anything about. So yeah, there were always kind of gotchas in doing it to a laptop. I get all that, but there are certain things now that I think we're getting to that point where we've got enough horsepower, we can afford to take a little hit. You know what I'm saying? By putting a connector in, you know, we can afford to take little hits here and there. I understand that it might not make them the top of the heap anymore, but that I wonder sometimes if that flexibility would more than make up for it with the consumers.
You know, it's a good question. The answer is I don't know. What I can say is that it is near impossible with most of the machines that are out there today, whether they be Mac machines, whether they be Windows machines, newer machines to actually replace any of the internal components. Forget the processor and the graphics board on a laptop. You're never going to be able to do it.
Right.
Those are on the motherboard. Those are hard.
But they're mostly pretty now. Everything's very pretty now.
Oh, it's very pretty. All right. But you know, the two pieces that you always thought you would be able to go ahead and upgrade were, one, the RAM on that machine. So you didn't have to pay an arm and a leg for whatever the OEM or the manufacturer was charging for RAM, and storage. You could always figure out some way of upgrading your storage, giving yourself a little bit more life, and making certain that asset that you went and stretched to get would go ahead and last a little bit longer. Nowadays, you have to buy as much as you can afford to spend, and maybe hurt yourself a little bit. All right, in order to be able to buy something that will grow with you.
Yeah. All right. That's like any M1 MacBook. Yep. That's the case because the memory is built into the SoC.
That's
any, so, I mean,
and again, that's a performance thing.
Yeah.
And right. The reason they did it, but here's the price of it, right? Here's the price of it. The price of it is that we don't get the flexibility. We can't upgrade it. And we just have to plan ahead to get what we think we're going to need for what we think is going to be the life of the device, at least in our possession, however long we're going to have it.
Right.
Yep.
It's a challenge, but I have to admit, I mean, these things are fast. I'll give them that.
Yeah.
Really, yep. Really fast.
I think Joel was the one that said it earlier, as far as the repair kits are concerned, some of these tools, are the professional level tools that they use either in store or at a certified Apple repair center, and they're not cheap. Some of the, and they aren't exactly what I would call the easiest things to use, so it's going to take a little bit. If you decide to go and chase after Apple's self-repair kit for your iDevice, expect a challenge, and expect to spend a little bit of money so that, you know, at least up front, this is not going to cost you $20 to go ahead and fix your busted screen.
Let's be clear. No. These kinds of repairs are not usually for the faint of heart anyway.
No,
exactly. No,
this isn't for everybody and their brother to go out there and do this, because most of us are going to, I've put myself in that category. The idea of
all three of us are techies. We're into tech. And we love tech, and we probably built a PC
or
two.
Yep.
And I wouldn't do this.
No.
Me neither.
Absolutely not.
I would not want to chase after the $1,000+ device that I've spent either for my phone that I count on or my iPad that I count on either for work or for whatever it is that I do that, you know, for a hobby that I need to do, you know, all the time in order to keep my soul from, you know, screaming. I wouldn't chase after those kinds of repairs. I would take it to somebody who will go ahead and replace the freaking device when they screw it up. All right.
But do you remember a few years ago how excited everybody was when iFixit came out with these tool sets that actually had the weird star,
the spudgers and the thing,
spudgers and everything else that we wanted,
and I've got
nothing to fix.
I've got them. Right. Do I use them all the time every day out loud? No.
And I've got them too. I've got a set too. And every time I go to use it, I have to go remember where I put it.
Yep. I have to remember where I put it. And I have to keep on telling myself, you got to make certain you pulled all the screws out. All the screws, Chris, because if you
and marked them this thing, and marked them, so you put them back in the right place.
Yes. You know?
Yeah.
Because if you don't, dude, you know, and give yourself room and a clean space to work on and whatever else.
All the things that go wrong.
Honest to goodness, those screws are small and tiny. And
I don't know about you,
but I can't see that shit.
I want one of those, you know, the embroidery kit magnifying glasses that hangs over your neck whenever you want to work
there
on
you go.
Anything anymore. I'm getting to that point. It's like, I need that magnifying glass to look at anything.
I whenever I do those kinds of repairs, I've got a jeweler's set of magnifying goggles.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
All right. And you know what they look like, Chris, because you've seen me wear them before.
I have.
And I use that, and it's got a light on the top. It's also got one of those little Copernicus style watchmaker sort of lenses that you throw down in, even in front of the
magnifier. Oh, sure.
So the super, super magnifiers. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, all the time. All the time.
But it's like, okay, see, I'm on their website, and here's one an example of how much some of these tools will cost. The basic screen repair kit you can rent for $50. But if you want to buy the tools to do this, the heated display removal fixture is $256.35 just for the tool, not counting the part. All right. The display press, if you wanted to buy that, is $216.
Right.
Okay.
And that's for after you are done and you want to put the display back
on. The screen device, back on.
You've got to press it. And you have to heat it up to melt the glue again. And then you have to press
it. And I realize that at the core, it's like, oh, look, they're trying to jack people with these things. But I don't really think that's the goal here. I think, first of all, I think they are a little more expensive because there's not a lot being made of these things.
Correct.
But right.
The second thing is, I think there is a certain level of desire to discourage people from doing this unless they really think they can do this.
Yes.
To be very, very honest, I want to go ahead
and raise the border a little bit.
Mileage may vary sort of warning for this. You said this, both of you said this before. These are not repairs for the faint of heart. They are not.
Nope.
You're going to take a heat gun and turn the heat on, turn the hair dryer, the professional hair dryer, if you will,
right,
on the seam of your iPhone. All right. And get it hot enough till you see the glue bubble up. All right. And then you're going to use the suction cup thingy to pull it off, being mindful of the cables, the hair width ribbon cables that are on that connect
you
the screen.
Hope you don't break. You hope you don't crack the screen while you're doing this. You hope
absolutely.
You know.
You want to be careful so that you don't bend, fold, or spindle, or mutilate those cables. You want to make certain you don't crack the screen or the touch layer underneath. You want to make certain that you don't, you know, bust the button or whatever else is needed in order to do the secure
or rip the connector off when you're trying to disconnect it from the board.
This is not for the everyday.
But as these devices have gotten smaller and thinner, I mean, this is how it's going to be. I don't care, you know, what you do. This is the price we pay for these devices to be as small as they are.
Now,
even though the right to repair your own device is very, very important, and I think everybody here to a certain extent,
I would agree,
supports that effort and movement. You're going to want some quote unquote professional third party to be able to do this for you who has bonded, licensed, professionally trained people to do this so that if they do, for whatever reason, screw up your device,
you get a new one.
You get a new one. All right. When you do it yourself and you take it to the Genius Bar and you're crying because it's broken now and will not go, you're out of luck. They're going to look at you and say, we have these brand new devices over here for only $1,000 more, you know, not what I would.
And I get both sides of the equation of wanting to repair it yourself and have the right to repair it yourself. But also, if I was Apple or I was Google or I was Microsoft or any of these, you know, Samsung, any of these folks, I don't want you blaming me when you break your device, you know,
right.
And coming to me and expecting me to give you a replacement. That's right. I get it. I get both sides of that.
They made it thin because it was a selling point. You wanted to make certain that the dagon thing would fit in your pocket or your front pocket or your breast pocket or whatever it is. Right. Well, if you're going to go ahead and do that, then, you know, and have it be that thin, you can't stick it in your back pocket and then sit down and not expect for the screen to break, crack, or have the thing to come back and, you know, curve. But this is just me.
Yeah. I think most of us wouldn't do it, but you know what? More power to you if you think you can.
Absolutely. Yep. You know,
the biggest device I would probably do this with is this Apple IIc I got sitting next to me.
Yes.
Something
old and retro that you're not going to go ahead and have to worry about dying. Yes, you'll be sad.
Right.
But
dies, even then, I'm very, very careful when I do it.
It's 35-year-old technology. You know,
that's right.
Be happy that it turns on.
And it has that panel you can open.
Absolutely.
In some case, well, not the Apple IIc, but
Interestingly enough, did you guys know in line in sort of like this and such a segue in line with this, did you know that the EU is close to mandating a couple of different things, right? The hardware related piece to this is I saw on a number of different websites over the last week or so where they are saying that they are this close. They're this close to mandating that a common universal connector for all smartphones. Now, most Android devices are using USB-C based connectors. They've gone off the micro USB, and most of them are now strictly USB-C. Apple really is the only major phone manufacturer out there that is not on a USB-C based connector. And this is really targeted at Apple. All right. They moved to USB-C for some of their iPad Pros, but not
and the Air.
Most of the iPads, the minis on it too. Yeah.
But the iPhone specifically and all variants and flavors thereof are still using
The
10 plus year old Lightning connector.
But here's the gotcha. Keep in mind that Lightning was also a security model. It isn't just a
Here's
the data.
There was
a small amount of security and intelligence built into the whole process. Okay, so here's the thing. Do you remember? Because I do. When they went from the old connector that we used
to use
for the iPad, the 30 pin to that Lightning. Do you remember the squawking that went on at that time?
Oh my!
How dare you change this? How dare you?
Well, you know what?
When and I think they've been fighting that. I think they've been fighting that notion.
I just don't see docks. Once the Lightning transition happened, all those docks died.
All the docks died because they were either 32 or 30 pin connectors, right? And everybody kind of got away from that because it was just this little 5-pin little skinny thing. And I didn't have to worry about I could stick it in, and I didn't have this big, wide, ugly thing, right? Yep.
The only ones that have it is like things like battery packs, like the Mophie packs.
Yeah,
that's the only one thing that's at all.
There's a couple of docs still out there, but
there's
you're
some,
right.
There's some iHome. There's some iHome related.
Yeah.
Things. I've got one.
So I think the move to USB-C will be simpler. But I think what Apple did was. I don't think there was never an intention not to get off the Lightning connector ever. I think the idea was they did it on the iPads first because they wanted to see how people were going to react to it. Because at the time, you have to remember when the first iPad Pro started to come out with a USB-C, that was a controversial thing. Oh my God, I got to have a dongle. Oh my God. Oh, you put it in a Mac. Now what am I going to do? You know,
right.
People got completely nuts.
And for the iPhone, there were two different parties that were complaining. You had your consumers who was like, now I've got to go out and I've got to buy, different connectors for everywhere that I had a connector, right?
Right.
All right. And then you've got all of the third-party manufacturers, the dock makers, the dongle makers, the cable makers, the accessory makers who said, now, I've got to remanufacture all these things and nobody's going to want to buy them, which is one of the major reasons why the docks died.
So take this for a thought.
Mm-hmm.
So they did it with the iPads. And there was a lot of screaming when we went to USB-C on the iPads, but people kind of dealt with it because it was more of a productivity type device in a lot of ways than the phone.
It didn't make phone calls. But, it wasn't.
The and so they pulled. They got it right. They figured it out. They got the connectors working really well and that kind of thing.
Agree.
Now, if the EU or whatever says you have to do this, they can flip all the iPhones over, and nobody will be going, Apple, why did you make us do this?
Right.
Right.
Apple can go ahead and point their fingers across the pond.
Correct.
At the European Union and say, well, they made us.
Don't you think there might be a little of that in this?
There may be. Personally, I'm at a point, and you and I, Chris, have talked about USB-C connectors and dongles for years.
Since USB-C started up. Yeah.
Yep. And my point has always been, I hate the dongle. I don't want the dongle. All right.
And I said, just jump there as quickly as possible and you won't have to deal with the dongle for long.
Right.
Well, right.
The problem was what? The same thing. All of the accessory makers,
they don't follow suit the way they should.
Not
tables are not consistent.
There's still many of them out there that are still making we're still dealing with the dongle.
Not like we were, but yes. Yeah.
not like we were, yes, but in many cases we're still dealing with the dongle and it's a pain in the ass. All right.
Yep.
I think Apple's gonna get a break on this one, and they're gonna be able to point to the European Union and say, you know, they made me. So but, everybody but that they, wants to scream, any, yeah, scream
I think
at Europe.
They're planning on going there. I think they're planning on going there anyway.
Yes, but they are going to go ahead and point the finger at the European Union. Yep. You know they
are. And I don't think, and to be really honest, at this point in time, I don't think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to complain about it. In fact, the one thing they're probably going to like about it is they can get things like my pick for the week.
Yeah,
and plug it into their iPad.
Yep,
and offload stuff you know, off of a memory card.
There would have been a decent segue.
Yes,
and we're not there. Yes.
But we're not there.
Yeah, I know. But
wait,
what does that make it a remote segue? Because we're gonna jump.
Yeah, no, we'll be there. Yeah, yeah.
Put your segue on pause. We're coming back, boys.
You know what else is also interesting? That's coming in from the European Union, and I'm going to link these two points together to help save some time here. And everybody, the two people that are listening said thank you.
That's right.
The European Union is also very close to setting up some rules for the app stores that are out there, which will affect Apple. It will also affect Google, and even to an extent, Microsoft, if they can get rid of the Echo in the Windows Store. all right. So they're setting up rules and mandates for being able to sideload things and move things around and being able to install what you want and where you need. But in part of that, I think in preparation for that, Apple is also removing a lot of outdated apps from the App Store. Those apps that haven't necessarily
seen
an update in maybe, say 5 years or so.
Right. And that's assuming the app actually needs an update, which in a lot of cases they probably don't.
Right. Well, terminal apps.
And that's where I have the problem with it. You know.
Right. Well, but let's be clear what they've done. They've said the plan is to remove stuff, and they've notified the developers is what they've done.
Yes.
So that doesn't necessarily mean that they get removed. I mean, the developer might come back and say, yeah. Here's what's going on. And I have a feeling that a lot of developers will explain to Apple, well, this doesn't get updated because of this reason. Because
it's done. Yeah. We don't need the app anymore.
Or I think that's going to be overblown. I don't think it's going to be as big a deal as we think it is.
Well, they are giving those folks, those developers with those types of app more time to go ahead and respond back to them so that they go ahead and say, hey, yes, it's still used. Yes, the form that it's in is still valid. It doesn't need an update because X.
They might have to update some behind the scenes libraries or something to bring them up to snuff. Yes, but this is all based on
security, right? This is all based on security so that nobody is running an insecure app that might be
security through obscurity really, but yes,
you know, at least that's what Apple is saying.
And
Apple's going to have a lot to say. I think Google will as well, even though they do allow sideloading. It's caused them, I think over the years, nothing but grief. There've been problems, you know, over and over and over again with malware of one type or another being introduced into a device or an environment because somebody sideloaded an app.
And in both stores, they've both missed things that they had to protect.
Mm-hmm.
They've missed them and gotten bad actors in the mix. It's happened. So, I mean, everybody needs to take precautions regardless. I would say.
Yes. But some of this stuff now is just so, they're getting to be so good at spoofing somebody that knows what they're doing.
Yep.
Who hasn't, you know, it's not their first rodeo, even from a security perspective. You know, when they click when they shouldn't, and all of a sudden, you know, they've got a bad case of ransomware that runs through the entire network, infecting every file server that a company has.
I mean, and right now with the current world situation, there's a lot of potentially bad actors out there who are deliberately trying to get into different corporate systems and government systems and whatnot. So it's an extra challenge. And some of these things have been really good. I mean, you really believe it's real, and it's hard to know. I mean, some of us can take, you know, we all take certain precautions on our own. For example, if somebody sends me an email or sends me a text link, that might be really a valid notice from my bank, for example. It yep. might be, but I still go independently out to the bank's website and call the phone number or hit the link from there or yep. check the message from there. Right. I don't yep. use the link in the actual yep. thing that they sent me
yep.
because I don't have, I'm a very suspicious kind of person. I don't trust these people. I don't trust anything.
And not to mention the fact, like I don't know about your corporate, but my corporate, they actually send fake phishing yes. messages.
Yes.
And they do that because they want to make sure we don't do it. But then the same people will end up sending out us web pages or emails with links in it, which I'm like,
yeah, right. why did you do that?
Bitcoin.
Right.
You know, right. Could you tell us
during your exit interview why you did this?
Right.
it's you know, very I mean, scary. So I get yeah. it. I get all the removing. I get the concern about security. I get the concern about old libraries, all of this stuff. I mean, I get all that. But the danger here, and Joel, I think you'd agree with me, the danger here is them right. being too aggressive and too assertive.
Yes.
This yeah. stuff. There needs to be a little bit of flexibility in the process. And I'm yep. hoping there will be.
Totally agree.
The fact that they started by notifying people, not just pulling it,
right.
lets me believe that maybe there'll be some flexibility.
I foresee some apps that probably never use some of the outdated libraries and wrote their own thing, you know, and at that point, once the app is done and stable, they have no need to update it further because it's all in their own code. So it's like, yeah. and in that case, just let the thing go. I mean, mm-hmm. The one thing I've learned as being an IT, either a consultant or just a worker for an actual institution is that you can try and prevent people from shooting themselves in the foot, but at sometimes you just can't go that far to do it, and you just gotta let them do it.
I think what they can do and they should do is at least to go, hey, you know, developer, you got these apps, are you still here? Is this still good?
Right. Is this
they're
still
not abandoned?
Right.
They're not abort. You know, they're not abandonware. They're not.
Agreed.
Anything like that? And because I think if you could go at least to that level, I think that says a lot. And hopefully they'll yeah. do that. And hopefully they won't take it any further.
I agree.
You know,
and I think it's something that from a security perspective is the responsible move by Apple. And speaking of responsible moves and stores. Did y'all see this? I mean, this is just really silly, I think, at least in my point. Meta yeah. is opening a store where you can go and buy Oculus devices and experience the meta world, if you will.
The metaverse.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a couple interesting things here, I think. First of all, you know that Facebook has been trying to rebrand themselves as Meta. They're mm-hmm. trying to rebrand the Oculus products as Meta.
Right.
I have a first generation Oculus Quest.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not bought the second generation because I didn't like some of the, we'll just call it the overhead and requirements that Facebook was putting into it.
The Meta things?
The Meta things. That's right. but having said that, the headset that I have still gets updates,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it gets them pretty frequently. And in the last couple of updates, they all of a sudden have started to change the logos from the Oculus logo to the Meta logo. And they're starting to yep. do those kinds of things. So there seems to be this larger trend at Meta mm-hmm. to try to give a face to this brand. Right. So
sure.
Putting this logo, this new logo in place, stepping away from the Facebook name a little bit, and creating this store mm-hmm. all seem to be pieces of this. But what's fascinating is a lot of big players like Microsoft have attempted to have stores and decided that other than a couple exceptions, it ain't for them.
Sure.
And
it seems kind of late in the cycle for this too, because the same time Apple came out with their stores, which totally made sense at the time, because at that time, Apple was not doing as well as they are today.
And they didn't have outlets everywhere. Apple didn't have outlets all over the
place. Correct.
So that's true, too.
They needed a presence, yeah.
Gateway did it and then shut it down. Like not even 5 years after I bought my one and only PC up out of the Gateway store. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like,
it wasn't a bad PC.
It's not I liked my Gateway PC.
I bought one for my wife.
I bought them for a lot of customers back in the day, you know.
Mm-hmm. But it and Gateway itself wasn't a horrible company until they became one.
Pretty much.
Very true.
Yeah, I mean, in this case, it's like I'm seeing that, like, now the VR stuff I get, you know, because that stuff actually sold before Facebook bought them. Okay. But the one thing I'm still really, really questioning is how well the Meta Portal is selling. Is it? It's well enough that you want to open a store to help sell it.
Yeah, that's a great question, and that is a great question.
To me, it's more of a PR move than a make money move, right?
Right.
Have a place to show things, because that was Microsoft's original intent too. They said that when they first started opening stores, they weren't there to generate revenue. The stores were there to present the technologies that Microsoft thought were important for us to see as consumers. And I get the feeling that that's what Facebook is trying to do. Yeah. But that is, as I mentioned, I think the store is basically in another Silicon Valley suburb and not too far from their headquarters. And it's a place that tourists don't really go to. So I'm not quite sure who's going to go there. I mean, you know, I personally, I'll tell you what, I've spent a lot of time in the Bay Area over the years. And the idea of driving around the Bay Area is like my least favorite thing to do. I absolutely hate driving around the Bay Area. It's terrible.
San Diego is a little bit better than that, but I didn't even want to do that after I was there two times.
You know, I've driven a lot in LA and in the Bay Area and even in San Diego. And my thinking is like, this is not where I want to be trying to find this. I mean, I wouldn't go out of my way to find this store as a tourist, even if I had my rental car.
I will say this. It actually got me to look up this story and in the Facebook store and things like that I kind of knew about, but not really, in like their Ray-Ban sunglass things with the they call them Ray-Ban Stories, which basically it's similar to what they did with the Google heads up thing.
Oh, the Google Glass. Yeah.
Google Glass, but without the glass part. It's basically cameras. And it's like the big reason that people didn't want Google Glasses was the cameras. It's and I'm like, would I buy these? Probably not. You know, I mean the thing I would like to have a camera at that level, because the camera photographer, videographer in me thinks, oh, that would be kind of a cool shot, but do I want it tied to Facebook? Not really.
Yeah, that's the gotcha, isn't it?
Well, but the problem there is that they violated the first rule of like giant tech companies: don't use your superpowers for evil. All right.
Well, even more than that, more fundamental than that. If you're going to deal with a big company, you have to have like this. You have to have some level of trust. Period.
Right.
And I actually have that in Google. Not in Facebook.
I do. I would agree. I actually, as much as I've kind of criticized Google in the past, and I would still continue to criticize
them. Absolutely.
I think they do a better job.
They do a better job far
than Facebook does.
Yes.
Yep.
Absolutely. And I wouldn't call them
evil. I wouldn't call them evil. I don't think. I would be clear, because their approach to things and how they use data has been generally open, although sometimes when they said they wouldn't, they violated.
But the only exception to that might be their recent search announcement, which I think got walked back a little bit, where they were going to block certain search terms or tell you, hey, you shouldn't be searching for this. It's like, well, tough.
Yeah.
But there were things like when they said they wouldn't track Google Maps and they did, and
right,
you know, and that there's a few incidences like that, but on the whole, they've always been very open about what their approach was, how they made their money. Facebook was a little shadier with that. They were selling data sets to people without really letting their customer know they were doing it, and there was some shady tactics going on.
Agreed. And speaking of Big Brother. I know that a lot of folks out there have seen this next story and have have had the same kind of reaction to it.
My goodness.
And I can't tell you how many memes I've seen of that one person with the skull cap and the glasses screaming because, you know, no,
right.
Well, I'm sorry, you know, Elon bought Twitter for
$44 billion. Has a lot more to say about it than you do.
They've got a lot of hoops to go through for that to complete, but yeah,
he does. Yes. I actually, believe it or not, I actually think it will complete, despite the fact that
I do too.
The fact that there are a lot of folks out there that are going to go out of their way, I think, to try to prevent it from happening.
Heads are gonna, and the thing that, and the real thing is Elon has basically already said this. He already has a potential CEO that he wants to put in place. And I see a huge shakeup in the C-suite and probably lower than that.
I see a huge shakeup coming to Twitter, not because management wants to make changes necessarily, but simply because there are a lot of folks out there who don't believe that his vision is going to make Twitter a better place.
Stop you right there for just a second.
Yeah.
And the reason is, first of all, I don't think we really have a clear sense of what his vision really is at this point.
Amen.
I agree.
We've got some snippets here and there, and we've got an awful lot of people speculating what they think he's going to do.
There is a whole bunch of speculation
I think people are going to be very surprised that he doesn't do exactly what they think he's going to do with it. That's
exactly
one. Yeah. Number two is the side piece of this is that, Joel, you kind of had a minute. It's the C-suite shakeup, but it's not just at Twitter. It's at Tesla too. The Tesla stock dropped a huge amount because the shareholders are worried that he won't be focused on Tesla anymore. So there's a lot of side issues.
$8.5 billion of Tesla stock just to help make, you know, to go ahead and put his own money.
And he had Tesla. He has SpaceX. He has Starlink. What makes him think by adding one more that? That's a pointless thing.
I think at the end of the day, this thing isn't going to turn out the way that anybody, pro or against it, thinks it's going to turn out.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. I do think some of the things he said, I think, are very good things. Being transparent about what you can and can't say in Twitter is going to be huge because right now you don't know.
Let me say this because I truly believe this. I truly believe that what he said, when he said, you know, I truly hope that none of those people leave because they can say whatever they want to say. That's what freedom of speech is all about. If they think that I'm going to be a freaking troll about it, they're allowed to say that. And I'm not going to stop them from saying it.
Yep.
And I think that goes a long way. I think those people may necessarily, I don't have one thought about this.
But if he goes to a pay model, that may drive a lot of people away. So it's hard to know what he's going to do.
That may be correct.
That's why I think this whole thing is never going to go exactly the way people think it is, because at the end of the day, this thing has to make money.
Right.
I agree. You know? It does have
to. And it really never has.
I don't know how profitable Twitter has been over the last
ten or so years.
It hasn't really, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I do know that there's been a lot of speculation about, you know, what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. I know that there's been a lot of speculation on Jack and what Jack is going to do after all of this happens. Sure. Interestingly enough, I think he came out, if not pro Musk, if you will, but at least he's said that he had a conversation with Elon about this and he thought that it was a credible vision.
And I've read, like, there was another story from about Jack saying things like he regrets some of the decisions they did make and into how it is today.
Yeah.
You know, and I think This could be a good way to return. I'm not saying it's going to make any the cesspool any better, because let's face it, that's what it is now.
Very difficult to disinfect the water. Yes. once that water source has been poisoned. All right.
Right.
I agree.
And let's face it, none of these things are permanent. Okay. So
these
services come and go at the whim of, I don't know, the teenagers usually. But
yeah.
The point is it's high and mighty right now, even if it is a cesspool. That's not to say tomorrow it won't be. You know, gone tomorrow for all we know.
It very well could be. But, you know, one of the things that I really like about Twitter is, from a customer service perspective, it is a great way of getting a company's attention.
Yeah.
And you are
agree with that
traction. I have gone to it 3 or 4 times in the last 6 months and said, hey, I'm having a trouble getting traction here. Can somebody please help? And I have gotten, within a half an hour to 45 minutes, I've gotten somebody to reply back.
You remember my story?
Yep. Yep.
When I moved in here, I Twittered to Google and say, why is my house not on Google Maps yet?
Mm-hmm.
And a month later, it was.
Yep.
You know?
And I'm not sure that's the only way to do this. But
no, there's your pay model. But there's your pay model.
Yeah, absolutely.
End users don't pay. Companies who use, you know, who go ahead and have it out there, the Googles, the Microsofts, the Apples, the restaurants, yeah, the big box chain stores, et cetera, they pay in. All right. Right. Why? Oh. Because it's effective. And people,
so I think for the most part, though, with this story, we have to wait till it gets through all its hurdles. It's going to take a long time.
Yep.
And then we have to wait to see what he actually does with it, you know. And
I agree.
And again, keep in mind, he does have to still answer to shareholders at the end of all this. Yep. So,
well, and he's already said, like, some of the people are thinking that, oh, it's going to be bring more racist talk on Twitter. I'm like, it's already there. You know,
yeah, I would argue it's already there. Yeah,
but it's like, he has to follow. Like, if the EU has a law and he wants it in the EU, he's got to make their view fit the EU rules.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, you know, it's not going to be, you know, some of the people are really, really pro Musk are like, oh, free speech is going to return to Twitter. I'm like, you never really had it to begin with. But
really sure anybody's ever really had it, because let's face it, there's you can't yell fire in a theater. You know,
right. But it's just like the story we had earlier today talking about USB-C and iDevices. Yeah. You know, they're going to be forced to do something worldwide because of the EU.
True.
And the same thing's going to happen with Twitter. So
there will be concessions. There will be changes to the deal. There will be concessions, yep, et cetera, simply because it's not just here in the US. It is global.
Nope.
And we're going to have to go ahead.
Well, look at all the services and things that have been, let's just say, modified because China wasn't happy.
Right.
Or that's
because,
right,
the UK wasn't happy, or because the EU wasn't happy, or because, right, you know, this is the thing with global stuff. We often do things and then the rest of us are pointing at it going, well, why did you cave into that? And then it becomes political, right, which is really a messy situation. But at the end of the day, if they're going to do business and it has to make money, then they have to compromise and
exactly
do that. And so that's why I think this will never be what we think.
Well, and if that's how he's going to go into it, where there's not going to be a compromise, you just won't see Twitter in the EU.
That's true. That's very true.
So, and the same
thing would be,
you know,
which would, I think, would be a unfortunate occurrence. But if Elon doesn't want to make those changes, all he's got to do is say, okay,
bye.
Yeah. Put it by.
But you know, if that kind of thing happens and it doesn't be, you know, that kind of thing ends up being the case, then it starts to lose its effectiveness in some of these other areas, like complaining about
and
complaining against Microsoft or complaining against Amazon or complaining against whoever you're complaining.
It's not going to break my heart if Twitter goes away tomorrow.
I think a lot of people feel that way, that it isn't, that they can, you know, they'll be fine. And then, let's be honest too, if these things go away, something will arise. And if it's successful at what it does, it will stay around. And if it's not successful at what it does, it'll fold and fail.
I believe it or not, MySpace is still around. It's not the same thing it was back then, but it's still around.
There are some components of these things that were, you know, they might not be what they were. You know, Yahoo is still doing its thing, but it's not as big as it was in some way.
Or it'll change.
Like, 97 new. Absolutely right. Absolutely.
Well, it's like Dig.com is completely different than it was when it first started.
Yep.
I mean, so, it's not even the same site anymore.
So I'm not too excited about what Musk has or hasn't done or who's going to be what yet. I think it's too early to get excited about that because anything right now is hearsay, including for him. Because just because he says it today doesn't mean he can implement it tomorrow. So
that's right.
It's just opinion right now. And
agreed. So we'll have to wait and see how things go.
And Tesla cars are still cool, and I still want one.
although the build quality could use some help.
Agree.
Well, yeah. Guys, you know, that really is kind of the show for the week. We're missing Mr. Larry McJunkin this week, and
yes, we are.
Hope he does feel a little bit better. But I would like to very quickly go to our picks of the week. So,
dun, dun, dun. Yes, dun, dun, dun. You want to go first or should I go? It's easy.
Well, hang on a minute, because I would just like to take a moment and let our listeners know that the show picks that we go ahead and we feature here are typically hardware, software, or other items that we find interesting and that we have either individually purchased and actually used, or that we like enough that we want to recommend to our listeners. We're not paid for advertisements
we didn't get a free one.
We didn't get a free
These are things that we like.
Yes. Yes. We are, they're not paid advertisements or items that have any kind of affiliate marketing relationships with. We sincerely believe in what we've picked, and we want to bring it to you in each show. Given all of that, I would say that the iTech Your editorial policy is pretty much in line with this, and that if we did do something like that, we would have to inform you before we announced the pick. So there you go. So Joel, with all of that wonderful legalese out of the way, talk to me, brother. What do you got?
All right. Well, I think everybody on the show loves Anchor products, A-N-K-E-R.
They are very good.
Including Mr. Larry, who isn't with us here tonight, loves
the cables, the battery packs. Almost everything they have is just excellent. The only thing I'm questioning is their headphones, but I digress. Me and I have a laptop that now has more than one USB-C port. I thought it would be nice and fester to offload. I take pictures every Sunday at my church, ranging from like, this is a low week. I think I had about 70 this week. Easter Sunday, I took over 200.
And I enjoy looking at them every week, believe it or not.
Yes. I wait for them
and I do check them out.
I do post like the top five, or like today I posted actually more than 11 really, because I had two posts, but yeah. And I'm shooting in RAW on a Sony Alpha 6400, which I should bring back as a pick. But
there you go.
But going through USB, even plain old USB 3 is a little bit slow. All right. So I picked up the Anchor SD card reader 2-in-1 USB-C. Well, the title's all messed up. But what it is a SD card reader for both micro as well as full-size SD cards that runs on USB-C. And let me tell you, it takes minutes to get all 200 pictures onto. I actually don't put it on the hard drive on the laptop. I actually have a SanDisk USB-C drive hooked up to another USB-C port. But this thing is a beast. A beast, not in size, but in how it's built.
In power.
And power.
In build quality. I get you.
Yeah, the build quality is super excellent. Outer casing of it is actually metal versus the plastic on one I got with something else that's a USB 2 one, which does the same thing, but it's just USB 2. All right. It's easily much faster. Now, granted, I do have my laptop does have a micro SD slot, so I don't use the micro SD as much as I use the full size SD. But at $16.99, How can you have anything that has USB-C, including the iPad? It's clear winner. You know, if you need something like this, especially if you're a photographer that shoots on prosumer hardware, kind of like I do, because the Alpha is a prosumer. The pros have started to move on to other flash storage devices, but I don't have anything that expensive. You know, this, although the Alpha 6400 is about a $900 camera, so it is kind of expensive. But you got to remember, pro cameras can be $2,000 or $3,000.
Sure.
So, if you shoot like I do, a lot of pictures with real glass instead of using your phone, it's great. I mean, I have no complaints with this, and it does work with the iPad. It works with my Android phone. It works with my Windows laptop, and it probably will work fine with your Mac. So I can't say for sure because I don't have a Mac yet, but I will. I will at some point in the very near future. So
I get you.
But I get $17. You. It's a winner.
Awesome.
And as you said, Joel, at the beginning of this, we've all bought a variety of Anchor products.
Yes.
And we've all been really pleased with everything from the build quality,
everything,
and the pricing,
everything that they've got, just about everything. I've not been disappointed by anything I've
ever. Chris is open for sponsorships, Anchor, if you're Anchor. Listening. Hello. Please. Start sending us stuff.
And we will be happy.
And we will absolutely use place. It.
Yes.
Anyway, I wanted to go ahead and I wanted to lay a couple of software picks out there. The first one is it's really a reiteration of Larry's pick from last time. All right, this is Mail Notifier. This is the app that is really, it sits in your menu bar, and every time you get a piece of mail on your Gmail account, it sends you a notification. It is absolutely fabulous. It works very, very well. It's free, and it does a decent job. The one thing that I really wish, there are a couple of things though that I really wish that it would do, and I wanted to go ahead and concentrate on this since Larry did such a great job of recommending it last week and really sold me on it. I downloaded it, I installed it, and I've been using it. There are I would like to be able to choose either a default mail program or a default browser that I use this with, that when I click on the icon that is in my menu bar and say check or even compose mail, I would like to specify, you know, whether I'm using like Apple Mail or whether I'm using Kiwi, which is a Chrome based or a front end for Chrome that effectively functions as a web app for Chrome that specifically goes after mail. All right. And that's all, or the Google Suite. And that's all that it does. All right. I'd like to be able to do that. I've noticed that I sometimes use my inbox as a to-do list of sorts. If there's something that I want to follow up on, after I've read the mail, I will go ahead and mark it as unread, indicating that there's some level of follow-up that I want to go ahead and do with that later on. But after a while, Mail Notifier will go back through my entire inbox and hit me with notifications for things that I've read it sees now as also unread, and I see, you know, new notifications like this was a brand new piece of mail. It needs to be able to go ahead and see, all right, what's today's date? What date is this thing dated at? And if it's still marked as unread, if you've notified on it, don't notify on it again. It will go ahead and actually take your entire inbox. Google goes and divides your inbox up into primary and then social and promotions. And it will go ahead and show you a count on your entire inbox and doesn't give you a way of just saying, hey, just show me new mail notifications or mail count on social or just on promotions or just on primary. All right. I'd like to be able to configure that a little bit. Other than that, man, this thing is really a nice app. You get to pick the notification type that you want, or sound rather. You get to go ahead and it's very quiet. It's very obscure. It doesn't, it's not in your face. It shows you the notifications and then they go away. Great app. The developer really should go ahead and charge something for this. With a couple of quick tweaks, this could be a nifty little moneymaker for this guy. So
I think to do that, they need to support more than Gmail, though.
I would agree. I would agree. I would like, if I use like Mail app, Apple Mail, or if I go ahead and I use a Kiwi, or I use Outlook, I'd love to be able to have that work with whatever Mail app I'm using. You know,
that's kind of where I'm at with it. I think it's very, very cool.
It is.
I just think it's too limited in its scope.
I agree. And it would be nice to be able to see a little bit more from it, but that's just me. The other thing that I I got notification of today, and really just kind of made my jaw just drop. Because I was very surprised. I am a big user of a app by Binary Age called Total Finder. Now, this is a Finder enhancement application. It attaches itself to existing Finder code, injects its functionality into the existing libraries, and enhances Finder. It puts out some colors for categories. It will throw out some updates to context menus for when you right click on a file in Finder. It will also go ahead and do Chrome based tabs for Finder. So to get rid of the default tabs that Apple uses, which I think are absolutely the crummiest and most horrible implementation of a tabbed file manager I've ever seen in my life. Chrome-based tabs are the way that file folder-based tabs, I think, are the best way to go, and this one does it. Well, when Apple came out with their own silicon chips, it doesn't win, and you restored, say, from a previous app or you tried to use it, it wouldn't install. It just didn't. The architecture on the processor is different, and it works very well with Intel based processors, but didn't work with Apple M1 based or Apple M based processors. Well, hot diggity dog, it does now. All right. It will go ahead and actually work. Now, there are a couple of caveats. All right. You have to go ahead and put your Apple Silicon based Mac into reduced security mode, and then you have to go ahead and disable SIP. Now, there were previous versions of the OS where you had to disable SIP to actually get it to install, but then after it was installed, you could re-enable SIP. I don't know if this
is fine. Why don't you explain for people what SIP is for folks that haven't heard the term?
SIP stands for System Integration Protection. It is a way that Apple uses. The operating system basically monitors itself. It monitors all the system folders. It monitors the system libraries and will prevent any malicious code from injecting itself into existing libraries, prevent any sort of hacking to your operating system so that if you get some kind of malware, it can be removed and not just show up as a additional piece of code in a system-based library that's been signed by Apple, so that once the malware is removed, it stays removed. It doesn't come back. So you have to do these two different security, and there's a lot of instructions on Total Finder's page to be able to go ahead and help you understand exactly what you need to do. And then how to make certain that everything is fully functional. if you're more tech savvy and you want this kind of interface and this kind of functionality, or you're used to it on your Intel based Mac, this is huge news. If you're not comfortable reducing the security on your Mac and you don't want to go, or you've got some sorts of things where you're interfacing with another network and you have to have full security, this is probably not the process or application for you, but this is huge. And it will also now completely work with Mac OS 12 Monterey. So it's a big deal. It's a big deal. Totalfinder.binaryage.com will get you there. And it's now free. It used to be $11 for a lifetime license, but it is now free. So if you're interested in taking a look at it, great application if you're interested. And that's all I have to say about that. So, this has been the iTech Gear Weekly, episode number 17. An unreleased device walks into a bar. Recorded live Sunday, May 1st, 2022. As I said, I am Christopher Spera. And for Joe McLaughlin and Chris Cavula, I want to say thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next time.